Drago, thank you. Julie Kassam, journalist and political analyst from Beirut, a pleasure. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review, of the Spotlight. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219 from the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizgar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Innalladhina amanu walladhina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. Innalladhina amanu walladhina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillahi ulaika yarjuna rahmatallah. أولئك يرجون رحمة الله والله غفور رحيم. يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون. الكوت ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them there is a great sin and means of profit for men, and their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines this hour. Iran once again warns that any geopolitical change in the Caucasus will destabilize the region and escalate the crisis. The European Union promises to increase military support for Ukraine despite Russia's warnings against Western arms supplies to Kiev. Also in the headlines, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea calls the UN nuclear watchdog Washington's paid trumpeter for joining a U.S.-led pressure campaign against Pyongyang. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Iran's top security official warns that any geopolitical change in the Caucasus will destabilize the region and escalate the crisis there. Iran's Supreme National Security Council Secretary Ali Akbar Ahmadian made the comments in a meeting with his Armenian counterpart in Tehran. Ahmadian said that Iran has a principled and immutable policy of cooperation and interaction with neighbors and the creation of a region free of tension and conflict. He said candid and constructive talks between regional countries will pave the ground for sustainable security, balanced development, and peace for nations. For his part, Armen Grigoryan hailed Iran's effective role in establishing peace and security in the region and called for Tehran to continue such contribution. Azerbaijan recently took control of the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region with Armenia following a swift military operation. The region is internationally recognized as part of Azerbaijan, but was predominantly populated by ethnic Armenians who have now fled to Armenia. The United Nations mission has arrived in Nagorno-Karabakh, the world body's first access to the region in about 30 years. The UN team arrived in the region after Armenia urged the International Court of Justice to order Azerbaijan to withdraw its troops from there and to give the UN access. An Azerbaijan presidential spokesman says the visit is aimed at assessing humanitarian needs in Nagorno-Karabakh that has seen a mass exodus of people. Nearly all ethnic Armenians have left the region that had an estimated 120,000 population before Azerbaijan's military offensive 2 weeks ago. Azerbaijan has already taken full control of the region. The exodus continued despite Baku's pledge to reintegrate locals as equal citizens. The departure of Armenian families was blighted by an explosion at a fuel depot that killed at least 170 people. The 37th International Islamic Unity Conference has kicked off in the Iranian capital, Tehran. The annual conference is organized by the Iran-based World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought and takes place during the Islamic Unity Week, marking the birth anniversary of the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him. Isumi Shahmadi reports.
The conference of Islam Over 200 Muslim scholars and researchers have once again gathered in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this time to take part in the 37th International Islamic Unity Conference, an annual event that provides an opportunity for them to share their views on recent political developments affecting the Muslim world, and also a platform that allows them to bridge the gaps and promote solidarity among Muslims worldwide.
Unity among Muslim nations across the world is very important. We have to work together and focus on the views that we share.
It's the first time I am participating in this International Islamic Unity Conference. And the reason is that it's very important to for the unity of Muslim Ummah.
We can exchange some ideas, some reflection, and we are very happy to be in Iran with all these ulama and mashayikh to discuss about the Muslims in we need now because this period is very important, and we need to be in union and to have many reflection and strategy for the future.
We read one Quran. We believe for one God. We have one prophet, Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and this is our way. We have yes, mashabs, Sunni or Shia or others, but also we one ummah, and we need to speak about this, and we need like this in the our participants to give the good picture about our community.
Very interestingly, Islam takes its name after a value system. It's called peace, and peace is what everybody needs, every family needs, every community needs. We are here in this conference, I believe, to demonstrate this value and to be the ambassadors of these values, especially for the much needed peace in the world.
Views that were reiterated in the opening address by Iran's president, who also emphasized on the liberation of Al-Quds in Palestine as the most important challenge in the Muslim world.
Unity in the Muslim world becomes more important day by day in the face of the enemy's plots. Sacrilegious acts of desecration of the Holy Quran, heinous crimes by Takfiri terrorist groups, and normalization deals with the Israeli occupying regime are only a few to name. A new world order is emerging, and the Muslim Ummah must establish itself as a key player in this new order.
The enemies want to divide the Muslim world in order to stop the Muslim community from achieving its goals. But despite all the efforts of the world powers and the United States, Muslims will always be a united community. Solidarity among Muslims is important.
The enemies try to divide Muslims either because of their ethnicities or their country and geographic locations. It is their policy to create a rift among Muslims, but we should remain vigilant.
Participants explained that becoming united means cohesion and solidarity and safeguarding the interests of the Islamic Ummah, which is demonstrated by adherence to the Holy Quran and Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, which is why the annual conference organized by the Iran-based World Forum for Proximity of Islamic Schools of Thought takes place during the birth anniversary of the Prophet, referred to as Islamic Unity Week. The 37th International Conference on Islamic Unity started with online panels on September 28th. The event will continue until October the 3rd. Yusuf Shahmadi, Tehran.
The European Union has pledged more military aid for Ukraine, despite Russia's repeated warnings about the consequences of arms supplies to Kiev.
Our support to Ukraine not only continues, but increases. At least by the time being, the proposition on the table shows that we want to continue in increasing it. And I hope member states will decide it together with the financial perspective before the end of the year. Our support is not conjunctural. It doesn't depend on the advances one day. It's a permanent and a structured support because we are facing an existential threat for Europe. Ukrainians are fighting with all their courage and capacities, and if we want them to be more successful, we have to provide with better arms and quicker.
Borrell was speaking in Kiev after meeting with the newly appointed Ukrainian Defense Minister, Rustem Umerov. He said the bloc's military support for Ukraine has reached a figure of 25 billion euros. The EU foreign policy chief also reacted to a stopgap funding bill passed by the U.S. Congress, That excludes any new aid for Ukraine.
And to tell the truth, we were surprised by the fact that the last-minute agreement has taken a decision that we have to regret deeply.
Borrell called on U.S. lawmakers to reconsider their decision to omit financial support for Ukraine. The stopgap budget bill was passed to halt a federal government shutdown. The U.S. has been leading a coalition of Western states arming Ukraine since the beginning of its war with Russia in February 2022. It has provided Ukraine with tens of billions of dollars in military aid so far. Russia has repeatedly warned that the influx of Western weapons will only prolong the war and add to the suffering of Ukrainian people. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea has denounced the UN nuclear watchdog for joining a U.S.-led pressure campaign and approving a resolution over its nuclear programs. In a statement, Pyongyang's Ministry of Nuclear Power lashed out at a resolution adopted Friday at a conference of the International Atomic Energy Agency that calls for the DPRK to curb its nuclear activities. The ministry said the resolution is a result of conspiracy by the U.S. and its allies. It added that the DPRK's status as a nuclear weapons state is, quote, irreversible. The ministry said the move shows their sinister intention to cover up their criminal acts of seriously threatening the international nuclear non-proliferation system and to justify their hostile policy toward the DPRK. Hundreds of thousands of people have staged an anti-government demonstration in the Polish capital, Warsaw. The protest rally was called by the opposition 2 weeks ahead of general elections on October 15. The demonstration was designed to galvanize workers or voters to take part in the ballot. The vote may decide Poland's future in the European Union and its democratic standing. Opinion polls suggest the Eurosceptic government could win the election, but may struggle to form a majority amid public discontent over rising living costs and an erosion of democratic checks and balances. Turkish warplanes have carried out airstrikes against the positions of Kurdish militants in northern Iraq. That's according to the Turkish Interior Ministry. The ministry said 20 targets belonging to the Kurdistan Workers' Party group, known as the PKK, were destroyed in the aerial operations, including caves, shelters, and depots. It added that many of the Kurdish militants were also killed. The strikes came after a suicide bomber detonated an explosive device near an entrance of the Turkish Interior Ministry building in Ankara. The attack injured two police officers. The second assailant was killed in a shootout with police. The PKK claimed responsibility for the attack. The Kurdish group is designated as a terrorist organization by Turkey, EU, and the U.S. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of the UK city of Manchester. They are angry at the government's policies on issues ranging from the cost of living crisis to public sector pay disputes to immigration. The demonstration comes on the second day of the four-day annual Conservative Party conference. Syed Purizar reports.
It seems wherever the Conservatives go these days, protests follow them. This one near the party's annual conference in Manchester, featuring campaigners and union members in their thousands, airing a long list of grievances.
Britain is broken. Everything from the environment to education to the health service to public sector. And basically, as you know, somebody who lives here, we deserve so much better.
Environment, financial crisis, human rights. I don't even know where to start. Everything.
When Rishi Sunak took over as prime minister, he pledged to have inflation, get the economy growing, reduce the national debt, cut hospital waiting lists, and tackle irregular immigration. 1 year on, he's yet to deliver on any of those promises.
You name it, education, school buildings crumbling, the NHS, they are the destructive party, and I would have more respect for them if they changed their name.
The Conservatives have tried to sell the UK's 2019 withdrawal from the European Union as a success story. But the impact Brexit continues to have on the country is not lost on its opponents, who also think today's crises have a long history.
This is a cycle which began with the neoliberal economics of Margaret Thatcher and has now lasted for decades. And now we can see what the result of that is. The Tory party, of course, were never going to make Brexit work for ordinary people. They were going to treat it just like they treat every other crisis, as an opportunity for them and for the rich and for the corporations.
Today's demonstration comes off the back of multiple public sector strikes over pay disputes in the past year, with some still ongoing. After so many years in power, the conservatives have gotten used to their annual conferences being a rather quiet and comfortable affair. But this is turning out to be very different. The call for change is in the air. Saeed Purizat, Manchester.
A year ago, a horrific attack on the Khaj Educational Center in west of Kabul killed dozens of people and wounded more than 100. Most of the victims were students from the Shia Hazara community who have been repeatedly targeted by the Daesh terrorist group. Our correspondent Rahmatullah Baghban has more.
This is where a suicide bomber from the Daesh terrorist group detonated his explosives last year, turning this large classroom of the Khaj Education Center into a bloodbath. 57 people died and more than 100 others were injured, mostly female students. 1 year on, the families and friends of the victims have gathered here to remember their lost loved ones and share their stories of grief and anguish. They are still mourning and suffering from the consequences of that tragic day.
Last year, on this day, I lost my beloved classmates forever and witnessed their dead bodies falling on the floor. This whole year, I lived with the memory I had made with them and the tragedy of their martyrdom. I was wondering how to live with the pain of our lost dreams and hopes. Every second, I missed them, and this whole year was as devastating as hell.
The families of the victims say they have not received any justice for their loss. They urge the Taliban government to bring the perpetrators to justice and to provide a safe environment for Shia Hazaras to exercise their rights.
As Emirati,
I call on the de facto government to bring to justice and punish the terrorists who killed our daughters at educational centers. Our students are the assets of the Afghan nation and should not be ignored. All Afghans have rights, including the right to peaceful education. This right should never be denied or stolen from us.
The attack also left many survivors, like Shahrbanu, with physical and psychological injuries. They are still undergoing treatment and therapy, hoping to resume their normal life and education.
After I was discharged from hospital, my physical injuries slightly healed, but my psychological wounds didn't. Since then, I've been depressed and shocked. I can't socialize or go out with friends. I'm seeing a therapist, and I hope this will help me get back to my normal life and continue my education.
The Shia Hazara community, which has faced decades of discrimination and persecution in Afghanistan, has been repeatedly targeted by Daesh and other extremist groups in recent years. Today, they want justice, peace, and security. This is a day of remembrance and solidarity for the victims and also families of the Khaj Educational Center attack. This is also a day of defiance and determination for the Shia Hazara people who refuse to give in to terror and hatred. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
And that is for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now. Thank you.
selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
Salam. I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me. It is said King Nasiruddin Shah Qajar stayed 3 days in Semnan on his way to Mashhad. Building at the time that had 12 different towers and a southern gate, but no gates on the north side. During his short stay in Semnan, Nasiruddin Shah
ordered the ruler of the city to build the northern gate for the Arg or the Citadel. And it means I'm going to Semnan province today. The Semnan Arg Gate is located in Semnan Province, north central Iran. This gate is one of Semnan's most famous attractions that has become a symbol of this city and has spectacular engravings and illustrations. Built during the Qajar dynasty, this structure is above 7 meters high. Its decoration is so beautiful that it catches everyone's attention. This gate is the only remain of the old Arch of Semnan, and its glory shows the old Arch well. The complex used to consist of buildings such as a telegraph room, a water cistern, a bathroom, and so on. This gate has been registered in Iran's National Heritage List. Okay, right now I'm across from the famous gate of Semnan, the Semnan Arg Gate. Wow, it's unique. Where on earth can you find such a beautiful gate? It's interesting to note that Arg used to be an administrative center in the past, and this gate is just a small part of the old Arg of Semnan, which no longer exists. Let me take a closer look at this magnificent gate. Wow, it's very tall. And it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes, it has 6 minarets, which are built symmetrically. Oh, look. I think that is the most prominent feature of the portal. It depicts the historical story of Rostam and White Demon on 7 colored tiles. Other tile decorations include the illustrations of Qajarid soldiers. And on the walls, there are tile work inscriptions written in the beautiful Nastaliq style of calligraphy. Astonishing! Now, let me check the southern part of the gate. In the southern part, there are 2 rooms which are built symmetrically, which are overlooking 2 Ivans. There are 2 small corridors along with the main entrance that used to be a place for entering and exiting. Although the northern part of the gate is much more distinguished than the southern gate, overall, this structure is a very, very special gate I've ever seen in whole of my life. And let me add one thing. The doors. They're made of thick wood, which are decorated with beautiful door studs. And be careful. Just like the past, the door will be closed after the sunset.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. Palestine Declassified has previously covered the Zionist stranglehold on the music industry, and we're looking at the topic again in today's show because we've uncovered more damning evidence. I'll be discussing this in detail with my studio guests after this exclusive report by Latifa Abu Chakra, who's been looking at the impact on the music industry of one influential oligarch in particular.
Who is the single most powerful person in the music industry today? Certainly a contender for the title would be Sir Lucian Grange, the CEO of Universal Music Group. In 2019, he was believed to have earned more than £123 million from the role. That was believed to be more than all UK songwriters put together in the same year. Grange was pictured happily next to Kanye West in the infamous picture of him donning the Make America Great Again Donald Trump hat. While West got significant backlash for wearing the hat, Grange received zero scrutiny. However, close inspection of Grange and his family members reveals a political orientation. Universal CEO Lucian Grange was pictured in November 2016 at a fundraiser for the Israeli occupation forces in Beverly Hills, California. It is highly unlikely that a man of his prestige would attend such an event without donating. Grange is very close friends with former Israeli soldier and prolific Zionist lobbyist Haim Saban, so much so that Grange recently appointed Saban as a director of Universal Music Group. Over the years, Haim Saban has raised hundreds of millions for the Israeli occupation forces and other Israel lobby groups too. Saban also funds the Democrats and has been described as scripting US President Biden's policy on Israel. Lucian Grange's wife, Caroline Lewis, is a trustee of the Bernard Lewis Family Charitable Trust. The family's assets are held by the Lewis Trust Group, which is controlled by an offshore company registered in the tax haven of the Cayman Islands. The trust has property holdings worth over £1 billion, including 13 hotels in the Zionist entity. Through her role at the Trust, the wife of Lucian Grange, Caroline Lewis, has funded the Zionist Federation, the Mossad-trained Community Security Trust, the Conservative Party, the Islamophobic Henry Jackson Society, and one of Israel's national institutions, the United Jewish Israel Appeal. Universal Music Group has a huge amount of cultural power. For the highest-ranking figures in the company to have these political connections to the Zionist entity should raise more than just eyebrows.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and he's now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. And I'm pleased to welcome back Amar Kazmi, who's joining us via Skype today. Amar's an anti-imperialist political activist and commentator. He previously worked on Jeremy Corbyn's 2016 leadership campaign and was a political advisor in my parliamentary office from 2017 to 2019. Welcome to the show. Amar, let me start with you. What can you tell us about some of the artists who've released music with Universal, just so we can get an idea of how large this company actually is?
Well, Universal Music Group is the largest music company in the world. It was, you know, founded around 90 years ago. And so it signed deals with some of the biggest music artists the world has ever known today and in history. And it's acquired the rights to lots of music catalogues. And there are names that many people will be familiar with, people like Taylor Swift, Nas, Kanye West, Bob Marley, The Beatles, Dr. Dre. So it's a huge multinational corporation with a colossal stake in the global music industry. And so it's a company with a lot of power, money and influence.
David, I mean, Amar mentioned there some of the major artists that have been signed by Universal, some of whom, like Bob Marley, were indeed political. But I wonder whether you could just maybe set out, you know, list perhaps some of the other political artists, you know, artists who have kind of got a political agenda, as it were, that have been signed to this particular studio.
Well, I would mention two which are, I think, relevant. So Stormzy, for example, famously pro-Corbyn artist, and also Dave is also an artist who's been a left-wing voice. And these are people who've put a lot of effort into their politics, into channeling the resentment which the people in this country feel about the way in which wealth and power is distributed, supporting Corbyn as a challenge to that wealth and power. And so you see that there are left-wing artists funded, signed to Universal Music, where at the same time Universal Music is making huge profits from their work. And the other problem, of course, is that there's a pressure by large companies like Universal to push them away from more radical politics, especially in relation to the question of Palestine. But not only in relation to the question of Palestine. So there's a pressure towards a depoliticisation, a pressure not to rock the boat on Israel-Palestine. And that's perhaps one of the biggest problems with this Zionist influence in the media industry.
Mm-hmm. Amar, it was mentioned in Latifa's report that the wife of Universal's chief executive has actually funded the Community Security Trust. I wonder whether you might just say a word or two about the role of this organisation, which is actually a registered charity, isn't it?
Yes, so Lucian Grange's wife, Caroline, is a trustee of the Bernard Lewis Family Charitable Trust. And so it appears that through her role at the trust, Mrs. Grange has assisted in funding the Community Security Trust, the CST. And it's basically an Israel lobby group in Britain that's received training from the Mossad, which is Israel's foreign intelligence agency. The CST also receives a huge amount of funding from the British government. It's a group that's been at the forefront of efforts to redefine anti-Semitism, to conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Jewish prejudice, and it consistently works to attack, censor, and to character assassinate critics of the State of Israel.
Yeah, of course, David, I mean, Universal was also the home of Dave Renzer, wasn't it? I mean, he's the guy who founded the Israel lobby group, a creative community for peace. I wonder whether you could just say a word or two about him and that organisation.
So Creative Community for Peace is a sort of front group. It's an organisation which pretends that it's there for the music industry to foster peace and dialogue in Israel-Palestine, as they would call it. But actually, it's a direct front group for another organisation, And it operates as a sort of trading arm and trading name of another organization, which is called Stand With Us, which is based in the US, has a UK branch as well, which is almost entirely, at least in its early years, funded by the US office. And Stand With Us is an organization which was originally set up at the behest and with the involvement of the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Surprise! Mm. So here we have an organization which is actually effectively an instrument of the Israeli regime, the Zionist regime, and which is involved in the music industry to try and push artists towards saying something about Israel-Palestine, but definitely not to boycott going to Israel, and certainly not to sign up to BDS, and also it helps to encourage artists to play in Israel, to help to legitimize Zionist ethnic cleansing in Palestine. So you can see the way in which this works is that people high up in the music industry are involved in an Israel government lobby group to try and divert artists from raising awkward questions about the record of the Zionist entity.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, what is precisely the link between Dave Renzer and Stand With Us?
Well, he set up Creative Community for Peace.
Yes.
And I believe it's the case that his wife is a director of Stand With Us, so there's a very, very close relationship there. But in any case, Creative Community for Peace is simply a front group for Stand With Us.
Right, OK. Well, Amma, the Grange family has also sponsored the Zionist Federation and have even funded the Conservative Party too. I mean, how do you think key Corbyn-supporting artists like Stormzy, who David just referred to there, who are signed, obviously, to Universal and indeed closely associated to Lucian Grange. I mean, how would they feel, do you think, to discover who this family is actually bankrolling?
Well, I would hope that artists like Stormzy, who, as David's mentioned, of course, was, you know, quite close to Jeremy Corbyn during the period of his leadership of the Labour Party and, you know, took a public stance against the government during, after the Grenfell disaster, would be absolutely mortified by you know, Grange's links, and anyone with decent politics would be absolutely horrified by it. You know, Grange has extensive connections with the Conservative Party and Conservative politicians. When David Cameron was Prime Minister, Grange was a guest at Chequers, which is the Prime Minister's country house. Grange was also a business ambassador under David Cameron, and he was actually very recently appointed to the British government's newly revamped Board of Trade. So this is a person who has extensive links with the Conservative Party and also with various Zionist organisations.
Right, indeed. Well, David, I mean, what do you make of the fact that Lucian Grange attended a fundraiser for the Israeli military back in 2016?
Well, this is an organisation which we have referred to on this programme before, the Friends of the Israel Defence Forces is its official name. Of course, we would not refer to it as them as being defence, rather to see them as occupation or offence forces. But this is a huge organisation in the States, brings in millions and millions of dollars every year, which are channeled to the Israeli military in contravention of all moral precepts, never mind the law. And so he was involved. There's a shot of him at this event back then, which appears to be very, very difficult to find on the internet now. And that seems to have happened after we first reported upon this issue some months ago. So this is an organisation which has its equivalent in the UK. The UK version of it is called the UK Friends of the Association for the Wellbeing of Israel Soldiers, which obviously also sends money directly to the Israeli military. And you see the way in which this operates through, and you can track some of the funding of it through foundations in the US, and you can see some of the funding flows, and then the money it then pays out to the IDF. But we don't have any record of Grange paying money to the Friends of the IDF, which presumably he has done. We don't know this, but presumably he has done. But there's no record of this. And so this is another indication, really, of the kind of opaque nature of the funding relations between Zionist foundations, Zionist business people, and organisations which directly support the crimes of the Zionist entity.
And briefly, I've just got to put the old chestnut to you that by, you know, highlighting this information, that in some way this is anti-Semitic. I mean, how briefly do you respond to that?
Well, these are organisations which are not Jewish communal organisations in any sense. These are directly pro-Zionist, pro-IDF, pro, and indeed some, in some cases, pro-settlement organizations that, that they give money to. I would also point out that this foundation, which Lucien Grainge's wife is a director of, a trustee of, also gives money to Islamophobic think tanks. So they're directly, this is money, effectively, which comes from black artists making huge sums of money on their albums, much of which then goes to be paid in benefits to people like Lucien Grainge, and perhaps that money then ends up funding racist organizations like the Islamophobic think tanks.
Well, we'll just pause the discussion there for a moment to this report now about the American music mogul Lear Cohen.
The other figure featured in the infamous Kanye West MAGA hat controversy is Lear Cohen. Cohen, described by Mos Def, now known as Yasin Bey, as the tall Israeli that runs rap, currently sits as the global head of music at YouTube. Born in New York City to a father by the name of Elisha, who had been part of the Haganah terrorist group, specifically as a part of the Harel Brigade involved in the planned Dalit campaign to ethnically cleanse Palestine in 1948. As a child, Lear Cohen spent years living in the Israeli settlement of Kfar Haim, which was named after Haim Arlosorov, who negotiated with the Nazis in Germany, as was the policy of the Zionist movement at the time. Elisha, the father of Leo, was later employed as security at the Israeli consulate. At the same time, his mother, Ziva Sirkis, was an assistant to the Israeli representative at the UN, Abba Eben. Leo displayed an industrious attitude. A childhood friend refers to Leo's running of a lemonade business in stark terms. Leo became like a slave driver. When asked why he became so deeply involved in hip-hop, Cohen said, "My mother went to work, and my black nanny, who shared a room with me, always sang me black songs." Leo was involved with the iconic hip-hop label Def Jam, where he expelled Professor Griff from the political outfit Public Enemy. Among other things, Professor Griff expressed support for the Palestinians. Through his work there, Cohen became a key figure at Universal Music, where he grew very close to Jay-Z, of whom he later remarked, "I would have married him. The problem is, he's a man." When Edgar Bronfman Jr., the son of Israel lobbyist and nephew of the founder of Birthright, bought Warner Music, he asked Cohen to work as his right-hand man. While at Warner, Cohen was reported to have blocked the album release of pro-Palestinian artist Lupe Fiasco. Cohen sits at the helm of the most viewed video service in the world and is very close friends with Universal Music heads Lucian Grainge and Chaim Saban, who are personally invested in Israeli settler colonialism in Palestine. Within a year of Cohen being appointed to YouTube, Israel lobby group the Anti-Defamation League was selected to be a trusted flagger on the platform.
Amar, what would you say to the people who say, well, what's the problem with the Anti-Defamation League being made a trusted flagger on YouTube?
Well, I mean, the ADL is a deeply nefarious group. It's an Israel lobby organization, and it's also a spy agency. You know, the ADL has been spying on Arabs in the United States since before the creation of the State of Israel. It was caught in a spy scandal in the 1990s, which included spying on thousands of individuals. It was involved in selling intel to apartheid South Africa's Bureau of State Security. And in the modern day, you know, the ADL works to viciously suppress all public expression of pro-Palestine speech and activity. It works not just against pro-Palestine politicians and activists in the United States, which it's probably most famous for, but it also collaborates extensively with social media companies to eliminate anything pro-Palestine and to promote the State of Israel's global interests. You know, but people are beginning, I think, to understand more about the ADL's influence, and they're resisting it. You know, the ADL recently received a huge backlash for its attempts to influence X, which is formerly known as Twitter, into removing content from the platform. But nevertheless, you know, the ADL continues to exert a huge amount of power in taking down online content under the guise of anti-Semitism. So for the ADL to be a trusted flagger for YouTube only gives it more power and makes it more effective in squashing pro-Palestine content on that platform. And that's incredibly problematic and deeply troubling.
Yes, indeed. Well, of course, YouTube's been in the news recently for demonetizing Russell Brand. But, David, I wonder whether you might just sort of outline what this show's experience has actually been with YouTube as well.
So this show has faced challenges from social media companies. We have, in the past, we've been labelled by Twitter before Elon Musk took over.
Indeed.
As being Iran state-affiliated media, and your personal Twitter account and my personal Twitter account were labelled in that way. We were also, of course, downrated through the algorithm and shadow banned. That seems to have lifted, at least to some extent, since Elon Musk has taken over. But on YouTube, things are considerably worse. So what happened on YouTube was that the Community Security Trust, the organisation we've just been talking about, which is funded by Lucian Grange's wife through this Islamophobic foundation, took a complaint against us to YouTube, and YouTube just removed the Palestine Declassified channel. Not only that, but, and I didn't even discover this until later, and the CST crowed about having had us banned and censored from YouTube as if this was something to be proud of. But not only that, as I discovered later, the channel for Spinwatch, the organisation which I'm the co-director of, have been since 2005, was removed without any communication with us and simply vanished from YouTube. Now, there wasn't really anything on there about Palestine even, so it was just a question of guilt by association. And so there's a real attempt to make sure that YouTube is controlled in the way that many other social media companies are controlled, in particular in the interests of the Zionists. So Facebook or Meta, Instagram, TikTok, there are all similar kind of campaigns to control all of them. And this show has suffered very directly as a result of that.
No, indeed. I mean, CST, Community Security, seem to be sailing pretty close to the window in regards to Charity Commission rules in the way in which they operate, haven't they?
Well, this is an organisation which has itself, I mean, it's the UK equivalent of the ADL.
Yes.
And it's, since the beginning, it's been a spy agency. It spies on anti-Zionist Jews, it spies on pro-Palestinian activists, it spies on the left. It compiles files on individuals. I asked for my file some 8 or 9 years ago now, and there were over 100 pages, I think, from memory. My file was quite small compared to some. I remember Tony Greenstein's style file, he asked for. It went to hundreds of pages and went back to the 1970s.
Wow.
So this is an organisation which really shouldn't be a charity.
No.
And the time will come when complaints will have to be taken seriously about it.
Absolutely. Well, Amar, I mean, why do you think Leah Cohen escaped any criticism from the liberal commentariat after he appeared alongside Kanye West sporting the Make America Great Again cap?
Well, I mean, this is just a classic case of knowing what side your bread is buttered. You know, people like Lucian Grange and Leah Cohen, who support Zionist causes, are well-connected, fantastically wealthy, and have a great deal of influence as a result. And so it's very easy for people to go after Kanye West and other black artists when they're caught doing something ostensibly problematic, and you know they're destroyed for it. And then you have people like Grange and Cohen bringing in millions of dollars a year from music, in many cases, that promotes violence, drugs, prison to young people, and also have deeply nefarious personal connections without any scrutiny of their views or their actions. And of course, there are executives at these companies personally making hundreds of millions of dollars from bonuses from these albums. So, you know, there are people on the one hand with lots of money to lose if people like Cohen go under. And of course, Cohen is a loyal executor of Zionist interests. So I think that's really the bottom line for why he's not attacked and criticized.
Mm-hmm. And David, I wonder whether you might just sort of tell us about the non-executive director of Universal Music, Hayim Saban. I mean, what do we know about him?
Well, I was surprised when I heard that he was being appointed to Universal Music because, of course, he's very, very well known in the US as an Israel lobbyist. I mean, he's a huge funder of the Democratic Party and of the pro-Israel lobby within the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. He created this organization within the Brookings Institution, which is a pro-Dem largely think tank, called the Chaim Saban Center, where he managed to get a key Israel lobbyist, Martin Indyk, to become the center director. He has funded APAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is the key pro-Israel lobby group in the U.S. for many, many years, and he is central to all of the kind of Democrat-related Israel lobby activity in the U.S. As we saw in the film there, he's even been alleged by Mondelweiss recently to have been scripting President Biden's policy on Israel. So this is a man of huge influence in politics, but he's now in this directorial role in Universal Music. Extraordinary.
Oh, indeed. Well, Amar, I mean, do you think that the dominance of the Zionist lobby in the music industry actually deters artists from criticising Israel and speaking up for the Palestinian people?
I think it's certainly the case that the Israel lobby's influence in the music industry has had incredibly corrosive effects, not just from the perspective of freedom of expression, but also in terms of, you know, the cultural imperatives that the lobby has tried to impose through not just censoring certain artists, but as I think David was mentioning before, earlier in the program, promoting other artists who are lobbied in many cases effectively to travel to and to perform in and to thereby legitimize the state of Israel. And of course, if you're a music artist who supports Palestine, and you know, if you go even further and you're vocal in criticizing the state of Israel, then you face potentially, if not definitely, being suppressed. And that suppression happens in various ways. It could mean that you're not even signed by a music label. It could mean that algorithms on YouTube and on various streaming platforms work against you, and so it's difficult to promote your music because it just can't reach its audience. And it could also mean that you're just unable to access certain spaces because Israel lobbyists are going to work continuously to have your shows cancelled and things like that. So these Zionist actors in the music industry are not just quietly Zionist. They don't just happen to be Zionist. They're there for a reason, and they leverage the influence that they have to go after people who support Palestinian liberation.
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there for today because, unfortunately, we've run out of time. So I'd like to thank our guest, Amar Kazmi, and, of course, our resident expert, Professor David Miller. Palestine Declassified.